went down and the jungle fire was burning. Down the track came a hobo hiking, and he said, boys, I'm not turning. I'm headed for a land that's far away beside the crystal fountains. So come with me, we'll go and see the big rock candy mountains.
When all is ready, I throw this switch.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Collected Edition, a comic book podcast where we discuss the famous and infamous runs and story arcs throughout the history of comics. I'm Paul Matthew Carr, and with me, as always, is Brian Reese.
Hello, Paul.
Hey, Brian.
Hey, Paul.
What's happening? Yep, so we're a little bit off schedule for various reasons, mostly mine, but we're back and better than ever.
And living in a four-color world.
That's right. Okay, so today on the program, we'll be discussing Rock Candy Mountain, the 2017 Hobo Spectacular by Kyle Starks, published by Image Comics. But there are a few things going on in the world of comics that we'd like to talk about first. And let's start with the most contentious one, the Watchmen TV series. They're actually going to be pirates in this one.
Well, you know, hopefully, yes, there were pirates in the original.
Well, here's the thing. The HBO series, the Damon Lindelof-helmed adaptation of Alan Moore's Watchmen, it has been announced will be a sequel set after the events of the comics in modern day with an entirely new set of characters. What do you think about that, Brian?
Well, I think the fanboys just have to be gripping themselves right now in terror, disgust, anger, fear.
I don't know. If you go online, you'll see people of two minds about this. People who hate that it's not a direct adaptation and people who love that it's not a direct adaptation. Lindelof himself, he wrote a 5-page letter, open letter to whoever, explaining his reasoning behind it. And, you know, not to go into too much detail, but my opinion is if you're not making an adaptation of the comic, just make it something else. It doesn't have to be Watchmen. Just do something else. Yeah. Just do something original.
Yeah, but so they're using the characters from Watchmen? Is that the... told me, like, I have not read up on this as much as you have, I don't believe.
No,
so.
This is brand new. And I just heard about this a couple of days ago. They're not using any of the Watchmen characters at all.
Okay.
It's a whole new set of characters. It's just set in that world.
So it's Watchmen world.
Watchmen world. So it's after Watchmen instead of before Watchmen.
Okay. So we're not talking about the Watchmen prequels that we had from DC a few years ago. And we're not talking about Doomsday Clock.
If that's even still a thing.
Which is the sequel.
Yeah, sort of. Yeah. It's its own thing completely. It's not going to have... Well, I mean, he said it in this 5-page letter that he put out there. He said it's going to be set in the Watchmen world and all the things that happened in that comic have happened. And it's kind of how the world is dealing with it two decades after or three. It's modern day. So, you know,
okay. So this will be post Doomsday Clock.
I have no idea. This is all assuming that Doomsday Clock even ends.
Right. It'll end in 4 or 5 years.
So there you go. It's a sliding time scale. Yeah. No, but I'm just...
Jeff Johns is a very busy man, Paul.
I know. He has a cinematic universe to screw up.
He's a comic book writer who simply does not have time to write comic books, people.
But, okay. And you're probably not going to like this argument of mine, but there is credence to the formalist argument in that Watchmen was written specifically for comics to deconstruct comics. And by putting it into a different medium, it then loses its meaning. And I'm kind of on board with that.
Or it changes the meaning.
But just...
Is the cat dead or alive, Paul?
Yeah, but my point is just do something different. Watchmen's done. You know, it was great. It is what it is. It changed how comics were written, and it changed how people viewed comics. It's historically important, but it's over. Do something else.
Sure, but isn't that world... So then, you know, I mean, we already had a Westworld film back in the 60s or 70s, whenever the original film came out. So The new Westworld series is unnecessary.
Apples and oranges. Apples and oranges. The Westworld movie wasn't Battlestar Galactica. No, the so Westworld. You're kind of missing the point.
Okay.
The Westworld movie wasn't, you know, trying to critique the movie industry and what it was done. What Watchmen is something very specific to comics. It was made to be a comic, and it's made for that format specifically and intentionally. By taking it out of the comics format, you're kind of destroying what it is. By making a new Westworld film or a new Westworld TV show, you're not taking it out of its format. You're simply redoing its own format. I'm not arguing that you can't make another comic of Watchmen. Mm-hmm. What I'm arguing is that Watchmen is a comic. And it's specifically created to be a comic. And by moving it into a different medium, you kind of destroy the whole point of it.
Or you open up the possibilities of what it could mean.
Yeah, but at the same time,
nothing is sacrosanct, and you know, if we start holding meaning to a static format or form. I don't know. I mean,
at this point, that's what I get back to. Just do something different. You're not using the same characters. You're not using the same themes. I mean, it would be radically interesting if we could use something new. The same way that Alan Moore critiqued the Thatcher
era. Did not use anything new.
You know what? Fine. He's doing DC. Take the Charleston characters and do that. That's what Moore wanted to do originally anyway.
I think a lot of people would love to see those Charleston characters used, but I don't have the info in front of me. I don't know who the heck has the rights to those at anymore at this point.
Yeah. I think it's still DC, but I don't know. Regardless, all I'm saying is you're not using the same time period. You're not using the same characters. You're no doubt not using the same themes because it's going to be, you know, because it's years afterwards. So at that point,
But you're using the world, right? I mean, so it is a created world in which a thing has happened that at least a portion of the populace is familiar with. And so you're, you know, it's sort of like, you know, when people write that sort of historical fiction, like the what if type historical fiction of, you know, what if the South had won the Civil War, or what if, you know.
Well, you know, in the same way that Alan Moore, you know, used the Thatcher era as a mm-hmm. jumping off point for his story, create something new using, I don't know, maybe there's a screwed up political situation going on right now that you could maybe get some inspiration from.
I have no idea of what you're referring to there, Paul.
That would be a very interesting thing to do. You're creating new characters anyway. Put them in a different situation. Sure. That,
and I suspect, you know, that, you know,
a deconstruction many people of the Trump era would be really fascinating to see.
Many people, I'm sure, are creating some interesting pieces right now, reflecting current events as they are occurring in real life now. Yeah. But I don't know. I mean, it doesn't seem to bother me as much as it bothers you. And I wouldn't even say that I'm gaga or super like, I'm really excited for this show. But at the same time, I'm like, well, why not? And it's not like Damon Lindelof hasn't created original content in the past and will not create original content in the future.
Well,
he was given an opportunity to take a world. Do you remember Thieves' World? It was like a series, and there was also Heroes in Hell. When I was growing up, they were like these sci-fi fantasy books that was basically, you had all these sci-fi fantasy writers, mostly fantasy writers, I guess I should say, who they were basically creating this thieves world, and they all wrote sort of short stories based in that world. And so it was all world building, but everybody sort of, the authors had free rein to create new characters and play around in that world. And while it all existed in Thieves World, I can't remember if that was the actual name of, I mean, that was the name of the series, but they were given free rein to kind of do whatever creatively that they wanted to do within that context. Now, I know you'll argue that, well, it's literature of, you know, it's writing, it's not taking, you know, comics and moving it to a different medium.
Yeah,
but at the same time, it's like you're given a world to play in, and I think the Watchmen world is an interesting world. I think that Alan Moore hints at a lot of things that are going on in that world that are never really explicitly explained or any time dealt with. So I don't know. I mean, I think it's kind of a fun idea to say, well, let's take that world and have some fun and play around with it. This could be a terrible failure. It could be awful, but I'm not going to know if it's going to be awful. Now, I haven't seen a stitch of film produced. They probably haven't even made it. So I don't know how I could sit here and say, well, this show is terrible or this idea is terrible without seeing the execution.
Maybe it'll be great. You're right. But I guess a lot of it has to do with, I think Watchmen is very static. You seem to think that there's a lot more to be done with the Watchmen universe. I don't. I think that story's been told. His point was made, move on to something else. And Damon Lindelof has, you said before, he has done unique and interesting things, original things. So I'd like to see more of that. Maybe it's just a personal bias on my point. I want to see more of his.
And maybe he'll do some original things. Maybe he'll do some, some original ideas and original things that he'll add to this. We can't possibly know yet.
Okay. I just think Watchmen's a dead horse, and just put your stick down. Stop beating the damn thing.
Here's the great thing, though. It's HBO, so we'll get lots of naked people.
Oh yeah, and some colorful language.
Yes, naked Watchmen people. You know. So
okay. So let's move us. Let's move. Put aside naked Watchmen people. And so, Brian, you wanted to talk about the real royal wedding, the upcoming nuptials between
the true nuptial that everybody really cares about.
Yes, the marriage of Batman and Catwoman, the Bat and the Cat.
Yes, that's Selina Kyle and Bruce Wayne, Paul.
The Bat and the Cat, correct? so
cat.
So you have feelings. Let's hear them.
Well, it's not so much feelings. I think what is interesting, and we're a month away from it happening, and of course there's all this talk. Are they really going to get married? Are they not going to get married? Is Tom King going to like switch things around and something terrible is going to, and you have all these factions like, well, it's terrible that Batman's getting married. And then the other people are like, I think it's perfectly lovely that Batman's getting married. And everybody is full of speculation. And so I'm curious, what do you think, Paul? I could tell you what I think, and you could tell me what you think. And the rumor right now is that it's not going to end up happening.
Well,
that they're going to pull the rug out from everybody, and something terrible is going to happen, or not terrible, but it's
he's
going to
come home and Catwoman will be in the fridge.
Oh, Paul.
Okay. I'll cut that part out. No, first of all, I find it hilarious.
Because Gail Simone is a huge fan of our podcast, I think.
First of all, I think it's hilarious that Batman, who always, he's in very much the same way like Wolverine is, he's a complete loner, but has this massive group around him at all times.
Yeah.
How many Robins are there now? Or Robin spinoffs?
I don't know. What time is it?
I know. And plus there's a Batgirl and a Batwoman. And
Batmite.
That might.
I
just think that's funny. Like, I'm solitary. I don't work with anyone except all the people I work with.
Yeah. Right.
But here's my opinion on it. I think that the wedding is definitely going to happen. But right afterwards, I think Alfred is going to get really sick. And in order to save him, Bruce Wayne will have to make a deal with the devil. And the payment for that will be that all the previous few years will be wiped from existence.
What an incredibly creative idea, Paul.
I know. It'll be as if a brand new day has dawned or something.
Oh.
No?
So my feeling, my hope is, I think, I hope that they let them get married. Because I think if they don't, keeping them from getting married is more of a generic trope than letting them get married. So we're expecting a wedding, so them pulling the rug out from under us. Well, we're all waiting for them to pull the rug out from under us. So it's more surprising if it ends up happening, if they end up getting married.
Yeah. Well, doesn't DC have a policy where people can't get married?
That policy has been done away with.
Okay.
But yes, they did have a policy. That's why we had some creators leave some of the books they were working on. J.H. Williams for one on Batwoman and what have you. So yes, there was a policy that no superheroes should be married. They broke up the New 52. They broke up Superman, Clark Kent, and Lois Lane. But what I think is, besides the fact, like, I love when Dick Grayson has taken over for Batman, for Bruce Wayne as Batman, because it recognizes that people do age. Now, we're in comic book world, so aging is a bizarre mathematical equation that I don't think anybody has fully figured out. But I think the possibilities of Bruce Wayne, Selina Kyle being married are way more interesting and endless than just going back to the status quo. Superman, Clark Kent, Lois Lane being married did not hurt.
Not at all. I think the last couple of years, Superman's been great.
Yeah.
That whole dynamic of them being married and having a kid. And right. That's great. It's been good.
Peter Parker and Mary Jane, we had a little fun just a few minutes ago.
Yeah.
But Peter Parker and Mary Jane being married did not hurt the Spider-Man character or the Spider-Man mythos at all. It added to it, whereas...
Yes. And it was a natural progression for the character.
Exactly. And, we've had how many, 20, 30, 40, 50, how many years of this whole Selina Kyle, Bruce Wayne tease? And if it just returns back to, here we go again, back with the Bruce Wayne, Selina Kyle tease for another 20 stinking years... Yeah.
Unrequited that love.
That is not an interesting story progression. Whereas letting them get married and seeing where we go from there, that I think that opens more possibilities than them not being married.
Exactly. And if nothing else, you could always have them, break up. But
right,
let's see where the story goes.
But I think there's generally a feeling of goodwill amongst the fans in favor of the marriage. You don't really hear a lot of people being negative about it.
No, I think it's actually pretty good.
It just makes sense at some point. And I'm not like advocating for, everybody must get married or, I'm not doing a traditional family values thing with this. But in this world, marriage, in that world, Bruce Wayne did propose. So, there is a wedding coming. If they wanted to just, keep fooling around on rooftops for the rest of their life, that's fine. But then don't introduce, the marriage concept.
No, we could do is find out that in the last minute, Selina Kyle doesn't want to marry Batman and decides she wants to marry Batwoman. A little switch.
Hey, well, there we go.
Yeah. So that'll fix two problems.
And poor Maggie Sawyer somewhere is crying. I fear that they're going to pull some switcheroo or something on us. And I think that might be more a lazier storytelling.
Yeah, especially if Tom King stays on the book, because he writes relationships really well. They're nuanced and they're adults. And look at Miracle Man.
Miracle Man is a great example of presenting a couple.
Yeah. So, imagine Selina Kyle and Bruce Wayne doing something along those lines. That would be really interesting to read.
Yes. So we're only speculating at this point. Nobody knows for certain what's going to happen in issue 50 of Batman. But my personal hope and feeling is that it is a way more interesting storytelling technique to let them get married and work forward from there, because I think it presents a whole new dynamic. And if they end up not letting that happen, if Tom King or DC or whoever decides to screw up that part of it, I would be curious how they go forward with the same status quo we've had for 800 issues.
I agree. Let's see something different.
Yeah.
Yeah. Something new. Okay. So lastly, in Batman sort of related news, the team that brought you Gotham is in the works to create a new series that has nothing to do with Gotham, Pennyworth, The Adventures of Young Alfred as a Spy. What do you think, Brian?
Well, which he was.
Yeah, yeah.
Some people have been reacting to that saying, well, it's just going to be a show about him learning how to be a butler. I'm like, do you not know the history of Alfred Pennyworth? Do you not know the fascinating history of Alfred Pennyworth?
Well, all right.
Some great Silver Age Alfred Pennyworth stories that are completely wacky.
But to get back to the whole, my opinions on Watchmen, Alfred Pennyworth is a great, fantastic, amazing, supporting character. But his character is defined by his association with Batman. Taking him out of that context, you lose what is great about the character. So I find it...
No, you find out something new and interesting about the character.
I just find it odd that DC keeps doing... They keep making Batman and Superman stories without Batman and Superman. I mean, do they think they're going to ruin the movie versions? Because guess what? That's already been done. So why not do an Alfred Pennyworth story as Alfred with Batman? Why don't you just do a Batman show?
Why does Batman have to be in everything? I mean, it's...
He's not in everything.
I mean that Alfred Pennyworth is only defined by his relationship with Batman.
That's what his character is. Yes.
But he has
a backstory.
That is not consistent with the history of Alfred Pennyworth in even the Batman comics. Mm. Alfred Pennyworth has been shown throughout history, the history of Batman, both under so many different writers and so many different situations, has been shown to have a real life outside, a real life that has existed outside of just Batman's butler or, second.
He was also a thespian. So,
yes.
So why don't we do a series where he's running a theater and every episode is him and his troupe trying to put on a different play. You know, it'll be like Batman meets Glee or something. Why don't we do that?
Oh, well, if Crispin Glover directed it, I think I would be.
I just,
It's okay for things to be different, Paul.
But it's not different. It's just going to be a spy show set in the 30s or 40s, except they're going to be beholden to this canon with ridiculous crammed in references of, can't wait to see that character, or, oh my God, this
character. How do you know?
Because that's what it's going to happen, Brian. That's what happened with Gotham. I know you like Gotham, but they're just cramming in references.
I don't like it, right.
But that's what's going to happen.
And
plus the fact that it's on, what is it? It's on Epix.
So five people will see it.
Exactly. So I was going to say, if anyone doesn't know what that station is.
Why are you worried about a show that five people will see?
I'm not worried about it. It just bothers me. Just do something different. Just do something different.
Paul, there's a million different things out there that you can watch.
But I love comic books and I love these characters and you're just cramming them into this garbage. Just either do a straight up adaptation of the thing that we love or do something else.
It just seems really strange to me that you just want to push poor Alfred Pennyworth into like this little box and
he's a supporting character. He's not a mainline character. I mean, he's not a main character at this point
in my life. I am way more interested in supporting characters than I am in main characters. So,
supporting characters are fantastic. When they
I'd rather watch Jessica Jones than Infinity War.
Okay.
That's odd. Neither are bad. Infinity War is not a bad thing. Jessica Jones is not a bad thing. They're different things. But to me, I'm more interested in the small scale, the pseudo supporting characters.
Jessica Jones
isn't
a supporting character. She's had her own book for since
right.
she created.
But
she's not a supporting character.
But she's not Captain America.
Well, no one's Captain America.
Right, yes. Well, apparently neither is Captain America now. But
I try to shield myself from comments like that.
Oh.
I just, make new stuff. See new things. New things. New.
So new things like just a new thing like just having Alfred be Batman's butler. That's a new thing?
Leave him alone. Do a spy show with a brand new character set in that World War II era. Just something new.
Okay.
I think there's already tons of that.
Those things do exist out there in the world, Paul. You can see spy movies or TV shows set in that era. So you have that option. I'm Team Pennyworth.
I don't think this is going to be worth a penny when it comes out. Thank you. Thank you very much, everybody. I'll be here all week.
Pennyworth squad goals.
All right. I'd rather see Batman.
Those phrases are worthless when coots like us are using them.
All right. Let's talk about hobos. So
okay.
We'll take a quick break. And when we come back, it's Rock Candy Mountain.
Yay.
Yay.
Batman Nightcast, a thrilling new podcast from the Fire and Water Podcast Network. hosted by Ryan Daly
and Chris Franklin. Nightcast chronicles the Caped Crusaders' adventures in Batman and Detective Comics after Crisis on Infinite Earths.
Highlights from this legendary era include
Batman number 400,
Legends,
Mike Barr and Alan Davis,
Batman Year 1,
Batman Year 2,
Max Allen Collins, the new Jason Todd, Millennium?
You're not doing this right. Let me take over. Alan Grant and Norm Breyfogle.
Alan Grant from Jurassic Park?
Did you hear me say Norm freaking Breyfogle?
Oh, yeah.
Son of the Demon.
The Killing Joke.
A Death in the Family.
Batman Year 3.
A Lonely Place of Dying.
Alan Grant, Alan Davis, Max Allen Collins. Why are there so many people named Alan from this era of Batman?
The Rise of Tim Drake.
Legends of the Dark Knight.
And that's just up until 1989.
Did anything exciting happen with Batman after that?
You'll have to tune in to find out.
Batman Nightcast, part of the Fire and Water Podcast Network.
Find it on iTunes and at fireandwaterpodcast.com.
Oh, we forgot to mention your favorite issue, when Batman fires Dick Grayson.
You want to find another co-host?
And we're back. That's your thing.
It is. No, that's great. I'm glad you did that. It's cool. All right. Rock Candy Mountain is a 2017 comic book series loosely based on the folk song of the same name. It was published by Image Comics and written and drawn by Kyle Starks. Set in the post-World War II era, it follows the adventures of two hobos, Jackson and Fire Kitty Dragon, Pomona Slim, as they traverse the rails, attempting to find the legendary hobo heaven. As the story progresses, the naive Slim learns the ins and outs of riding the rails, and we piece together the dark secrets surrounding Jackson's past. And during their travels, they meet up with a host of colorful characters, from down-and-dirty street fighters to the hobo mafia. And all the while, they're pursued doggedly by FBI agents of varying levels of competence. And of course, the actual literal devil. Along the way, we learn the difference between hobos and vagrants, what really happened to Adolf Hitler, and the true meaning of friendship, and how far one will go to reunite with family. Rock Candy Mountain is a loving homage to a distant past that never was. It's a comedy that packs a surprising emotional punch. It's populated with characters that seem familiar, but turn out to be unique and different in ways you did not expect. Rock Candy Mountain is a romp, a fun-filled fantasy adventure with memorable characters, laugh-out-loud moments, a bevy of quotable lines, and a heartwarming charm that will stay with you long after the reading is done. Brian, what did you think of Rock Candy Mountain?
I loved it. I think this was a great, great, great recommendation. It had been on my radar for a while, and I had picked up the trades, but I had never gotten around to actually reading it. And, of course, that's a little silly considering that this is right up my alley in various ways. Partially based on a music website that I used to run that went by the name of Big Rock Candy Mountain. And the song, the Harry McClintock version, the real version, is one of my grand theme songs. So I was already predisposed to have an interest in this. I also have an interest in hobo culture in general, which is part of why I picked up the trades, but had just, with all the other trades and things that I have sitting around, had not gotten around to reading it yet. And I'm so glad you recommended this, because I have read this, I think, 4 times now since you recommended it, and each time I enjoy it more.
Yeah, it's just fun, isn't it?
It is.
You know, I mean, and we'll get into it.
There's whole issues of just nonstop fight sequences, hobo fight sequences.
Yeah, and bare knuckle fight, cage fighting, and yes, it's lovely.
A royal rumble between bulls, hobos, and the Fed.
It's just, yes, it was just one of those comics that I picked up and just said, well, that was hilarious. I mean, it starts out with the devil yelling about effing hobos. That's the first page. She's like, oh, this, how can this be bad? But what I find fascinating about it is that it's obviously not an accurate representation of the time period. It's a fantasy, and it's kind of a naive representation of the era. But that's what makes its serious moments, like the war scenes and the loss of Jackson's family. That's what makes it have so much more impact to me, anyway.
Right. Well, I think there is it is drawing on sort of real life in terms of hobo culture at the time. There are many parts of this that reflect how things really were in that world.
Yeah, I guess what I mean by, yes, that is true. It's exaggerated, yeah. And there's a lot of modern sensibilities on top.
There are a lot of modern sensibilities, but there it does harken back to real, you know, reportage of life as a hobo. And many books. I think this guy, if I was reading up on him a little bit, the writer, and he did his research. And there are a great many books, both fictional and nonfiction, that detail the life, you know, sort of that culture. And hobo culture still exists. There are now it exists in a very different way, and in some cases it's not the most pleasant. A group of individuals now that embrace that culture, and even back in the day, these were not always good people,
right?
But they did live by a code.
Yeah, I guess I think what Starks did was he took all that real life stuff, but he wasn't beholden to it. He could tell a modern joke or put his own spin on things.
The devil, the real actual devil, is a prominent character.
Yes. I mean, of course. And the fact that Jackson's bindle is the spear of destiny that killed Christ.
Right.
Or that pierced Christ. So, yeah.
We're not giving anything away.
Yeah. I guess we should say spoilers now that we've just spoiled everything. But it's not really about the spoilers. I mean, this isn't that kind of a story.
Right. Yeah. I mean, there are some surprises here and there, but the story itself is like with hobos, the journey.
Yes. And a lot of the big, you know, a lot of the big reveals are telegraphed miles away. So,
right.
It's not a huge surprise, but it's really heartfelt. There are times, and it's laid out in the second issue when they're sitting around and Cookie, the hobo cook, kind of lays out what the philosophy of the story is going to be. And that's searching for hope.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, he's got that great line. What is it? Is hope real?
Is hope real? Well, there's also when Pomona Slim says, you know, it's just a song. And he said, yeah, but the Bible's just a book. It's like, wow, now that's a great line.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, and to clarify, to in case folks are wondering what we're talking about. So the character Jackson is using the song Big Rock Candy Mountain in a magical book. He is trying to find his lost family.
Yeah, I guess it would be good if we actually talked about what the story is about.
If we actually talked to, so what happens is, of course, Pomona Slim, who was an actor, a down on his luck actor, who is presented throughout the thing as always having bad luck. He's saved by Jackson. He's trying to like jump on a train, and Jackson, the primary character, the one carrying the Spear of Destiny, the one who is searching for Big Rock Candy Mountain. So Pomona Slim is the skeptic, and throughout most of the comic, he thinks that Jackson is batshit crazy.
He's also the audience identification character. We see the world of the hobos and the life of Jackson through his eyes, and as he learns things, so do we.
But the other hobos accept Jackson's quest to find Big Rock Candy Mountain because they all have their own sort of crackpot things going on in their lives. I mean, you know, one of my favorite characters is Gumpy Tom.
Yes, indeed.
Who Gumpy Tom is a hobo who's in this scene that we were referencing where one of the other hobos, Cookie, is talking to Pomona Slim and telling him that, you know, yes, Jackson searching for Big Rock Candy Mountain sounds crazy, but then that's where he brings up the is hope real? And so there's Cookie, one of the hobos, and then there's Gumpy Tom, who always has a chicken to throw into the stew, except for the chicken that he keeps with him, who is, I have to reference this because I couldn't remember. So the chicken that Gumpy Tom has that never gets thrown in the stew, it's his friend, it's his pet, basically. But the chicken is referred to the king of Humblebrecht County. Right. So the chicken is the king of Humblebrecht County, and everybody just accepts that, and they refer to the chicken as Your Majesty at one point. You know, and whenever anybody runs into Gumpy Tom, you know, they of course address his pet chicken.
Well, you always have to be nice to the man with who can provide a chicken.
Right.
There's so many little things in here like that. And that's what makes it just thoroughly entertaining.
So the main forward action within this is essentially Jackson's quest for Big Rock Candy Mountain and all the other characters that he brings into his sphere as this quest continues.
Yeah. I guess we should mention that Jackson has sold his soul to the devil, which is why he's trying to find Big Rock Candy Mountain in order to...
Because Jackson, and that is not his real name. He's just called Jackson because he's from Jackson. And it's also very interesting, just as an aside, we never know Jackson's real name.
And we don't need to, well, it could be Dog Nuts.
It could be Dog Nuts, but it's probably not. That's probably not his real name. We know the name of his wife, Holly, and his daughter, Sarah. But we never know his real name, which of course presents him as sort of an everyman. You know, he is the everyman on a quest. He is the unknown man.
Well, he's the Clint Eastwood man with no name,
right?
Kind of thing. Well, even though he has a name, but it's not his real name. Let's not delve too deep into that. But Jackson has, I find his backstory lovely. Really, I mean, it's horrible and tragic, but it's actually in a story that's so silly at times. He's filled with some true tragedy. He was pulled away from his family to go to war, World War II. He was so desperate to make it back to them that he sold his soul. And his big, what do you call it, ability, is that he cannot be defeated by one man.
No one man can defeat him.
Exactly.
And of course, it's the devil, so the wording is very important. No one man can defeat him.
And then how far in spoilers do we want to go with this? Total?
It's probably okay, I think.
Yeah, because... I mean,
we're talking about... We can't talk about the comic without talking about the thing that happened, the things that happen and...
Well, the biggest... And in fact, one of the issues is devoted to Jackson's backstory of his China war and so forth. He kills Adolf Hitler, which is neat.
Yes.
And steals the Spear of Destiny, which is what Hitler was supposedly looking for.
Yes, because Hitler was doing an incantation at the time and...
Little bit of biblical lore, real quickly. The Spear of Destiny is supposedly what pierced the side of Christ while he was on the cross. A Roman soldier pierced his side, and that is now imbued with the power to any person who holds that cannot be defeated in battle.
Right,
that's the legend. So he not only kills Hitler, he gets the Spear of Destiny. So that's impressive. But the biggest tragic moment is when he returns home. He's done all this so that he can make it home to his family, and the train carrying them to greet him crashes and they die. I'm going to have to, it isn't specifically spelled out, but I'm going to have to think that the devil had a hand in that.
I think it was strongly hinted at that the devil was the one who, he actually, I think there's a point in the comic where he kind of references it.
I didn't think it was
specifically not specifically, stated. But close enough. It's the what is it? The tears of the wife or God is. It's when it's raining.
Oh yeah, that's right. The devil's not a nice person.
No, but he's also the funniest character.
I don't know. Big Sis is pretty damn funny. I think.
Yeah,
Big Sis is just this huge hulking man, but he's just sort of like a child man,
and he's mute,
and he's just. Wonderful. And then, of course, there's so many great characters in this. 100 Cat, who's a street fighter.
Who is constantly having to explain his name. His name's 100 Cat, but nobody understands what that means. And when he explains it, it just makes it worse. And so Jackson is trying to find Big Rock Candy Mountain because his wife and child are dead. He has a book that he took from Hitler that Hitler was using at the time that he killed him. So not only did he get the Spear of Destiny, he got this book where if you write the right thing in it, the correct thing in it, it's a compass. The book is a compass that leads you to the place that you want to go. Doesn't work for everything.
No, basically, if you put your heart's desire in the book, it will lead you to that.
And no matter where you turn the book, whatever you've written in there, the arrow doesn't move. The book moves, but the arrow doesn't move. It just, you keep, it's a compass. That was a long explanation just to say it's a compass.
Yeah. It's a magical book compass.
So throughout, as part of what is going on there, he is also being chased by the feds because they want to reclaim the Spear of Destiny from him. So you have him being chased by the feds. You have him being chased by the hobo mafia with Boss Flimbo.
Yeah, we haven't even talked about that. I love the fact that Boss Flimbo, the only reason he's the head of the mafia is because his dad is rich.
Owns the railroad.
Owns the railroad. So he gets to ride the rails as this spoiled little rich kid who rules the hobos.
Essentially, everything culminates with kind of a heist. There's a small heist that involves the Spear of Destiny. And we also have Satan chasing, or the devil chasing him through all of this, trying to claim his soul. Pomona Slim learns a lot about himself, and he makes a very special friend in Big Sis.
Everyone has their hero moment, basically.
Yeah.
That last hobo rumble, every plot point that he's been throwing in throughout the story kind of comes together in this one spot.
And it's almost an issue long.
I know.
It's just this issue long fight. And the fight scenes are great. So we should mention that the art is very cartoony, intentionally cartoony. There's no attempt to make anything look realistic. But the violence in it is, it should be warned, there's a lot of there's a lot of very bad words.
Yes, there's very bad words. And
this is not for kids.
Yeah, it's fine. Yes, I know the art is simple and cartoonish, but it fits so well with the aesthetic of this story.
Oh, yeah, it's great.
Yeah.
You know, but it's definitely not realistic. But then you get to the violence, and it's the violence and the blood is so over the top. That's not a complaint. It's great. Yes. I'm advocating for terrible violence.
but it's cartoonish violence. The aesthetic of the book is so good. Yes, it's horrible and terrible things are happening, but it's done in such a way that it doesn't seem bad. If that makes any sense.
It's itchy and scratchy times 100.
Exactly. It's just excellent all the way through, in my mind. He has a knack for telling really good jokes through dialogue.
Yes.
How people talk to each other. And that's actually something that seems very accurate. It's almost, you could, if you read it in such a way, you could see it being more like a 1920s screwball comedy with that quick,
right,
snappy talk. Yeah, so it's and that aspect is really well done as well.
Well, one of my favorite scenes is basically one panel, and it's where we're first introduced to Babs Bordeaux, the sort of captain of the FBI agents that are chasing Jackson, and it's when she's first introduced and she's talking to some of her agents, one of whose name is Champ Wachowski. I love Champ Wachowski. And what is it? She's like, she's telling him, I wasn't given this job just because the director needed help picking out dresses.
Exactly.
And the agents look at each other and they're like, what? Director Hoover? And it's one panel and that's it. It's never referenced again. But, you know, she's, and it's a panel. You just have to see it. It probably doesn't come across quite as humorous.
Well, it's great. There's little things like Pomona Slim. My personal favorite line of the whole book is Pomona Slim tells Jackson, "You're inscrutable," and he turns to him and says, "I have scrutles." I had to stop for a moment because I found that so hilarious. Yeah, I just there's so many lovely little moments scattered throughout this, and and that's the thing. It's silly. And it's over the top, and it's wild, and it's at times ultra-violent, and it has these fantasy aspects. But then it keeps bringing you back to these little tender moments, these little moments of friendship. And then, of course, Jackson's his quest to get back to his family is the overarching, you know, heart of the story.
And whether he makes it or not, we will not say. Or will we?
I wanted to say that it's kind of ambiguous in the story, but nah, you know what happens. It's just love. I find the whole overarching idea of just hope, just striving for something better, or knowing something better is out there, and that's what leads, and that's what pushes all these people forward. No matter who, all the characters in there, in some way, they have a hope for something. And that's what leads them.
Well, and it's reflective of the song, because you know, the song "Big Rock Candy Mountain." Most people have heard it if through no other source than "Oh Brother, Where Art Thou?" But the song itself is a dream of all these, you know, sort of wonderful things, and it's cast in like the hobo light. So you know, it's little streams of alcohol, and you know, it's all these like.
Yeah, all the cops have wooden legs, and the jails are made of tin.
Right.
I'm trying to remember all the lyrics. But no doubt, at this point, I've already played the song for everybody.
Oh, good.
If I'm smart, I will have done that already. but what else we got to say, instead of just gushing?
I mean, you're right. The problem, one of the problems with doing this is like it's all about these little scenes.
Yeah,
and, you know, then we could just go for hours just mentioning, you know.
And remember that part. Remember that part.
Then we're like Chris Farley on Saturday Night Live.
So, you know, overall, bottom line is I enjoyed the hell out of this comic. I think it's just a blast to read. It's clever. It's funny. It's got a big heart. And I just, you know, it's about hobos. I just had fun reading this comic. And it's fun to have fun. And, you know, in a world where things are always so dire and grim dark. It's just nice to have something colorful, goofy, and fun that makes you feel something special at the end. You know,
and it has a point.
Yes,
and,
it does.
You know, there are parts of it that we haven't discussed because we could just sit here and list off all the great scenes, and there are so many great scenes and so many great fight scenes. There's just so much to it.
Yeah, it's clever. Like I was saying before, how all these little moments, you know, which you think are separate little vignettes throughout the entire all the issues, they all come together in the final moments. Every single thing that's been set up comes together in that final, you know, hobo rumble, and it's very clever. It's very well done. It's very, you know, I love it when a plan comes together. I found this so much fun to read.
Well, I think we could safely say that we are recommending this highly if folks haven't read it.
Absolutely. Okay. Well, that was, you know, quick. Just a quick heaping of praise before we move on to our next episode. And as far as our next episode is concerned, Brian, it's up to you to choose the next comic. What's it going to be?
Well, in keeping with fun, my recommendation for our next episode, I am recommending Legion of Superheroes Archives, Volume 1.
Woohoo!
Yes, the Silver Age, the very first appearances of the Legion of Superheroes, brought to you in four-color splendor.
Lots of boys and lads and gals and...
Lots of, yeah. So we haven't really covered the Silver Age much, and the Legion of Superheroes has such a vast history, some of it very confusing, some of it kind of wacky, and I just thought, let's start at the very beginning. Not all of the classic stories are in the first archive, and this is published by DC. It's actually an archive edition, a hardcover archive edition, but I thought it would be kind of fun to start at the beginning. The beginning and the origins of the Legion of Superheroes.
I agree, and I really have a fondness for that era. I can't wait to revisit some of these old comics. And especially, you know, I'm more of a Marvel guy, of course, so I know that Marvel era much better than I do DC. So it's going to be fun seeing these comics again for the first time.
Exactly.
So that's going to be a lot of fun. So I guess that's it for this episode. We'd love to hear what you think. So please send us your feedback by leaving a comment on the individual episode. That's collectededitionpodcast.com. Or send us an email at comments@collectededitionpodcast.com. Or on Twitter @collectededpod. That's collectededpod. And if you leave us a review on iTunes, that would be great as well, because it does help us get found. Anything else, Brian?
I have nothing else to add.
Well then, until next time, keep reading comics.
And be well.
You've been listening to The Collected Edition, a comic book podcast. The Collected Edition is a Daddy Elk production. All materials used on the show are copyright their respective copyright holders, and no infringement is intended. The show can be found on iTunes, Stitcher, and Google Play, as well as online at collectededitionpodcast.com, where comments can be left on individual episodes. You can also send us feedback at comments@collectededitionpodcast.com or on Twitter at collectededpod. That's collected, E-D-P-O-D. The Collected Edition, a comic book podcast, is for entertainment purposes only.
Are you not entertained? Are you not entertained?
That was fun.
Yeah, it's kind of fun when we disagree.
They don't get that from us very often.
I mean, it sucks that I'm right all the time, but...
Clearly you've seen the shows already.
Oh, you know Pennyworth is gonna suck. You just know it. Deep down in your heart, you know it's going to suck.
I don't know that it's going to suck. You could be right, but it's really hard for me to say something is bad when they haven't even probably written a script yet. Well, okay, a script's probably been written somewhere, or a treatment has already been.
Or you know what, you know, because it's not going to have anything to do with Gotham. But you know what, I actually like Sean Pertwee's portrayal of Alfred. Do a show on him if you're going to do a Pennyworth. Use him.
Sure.
But they're not. It's going to be completely different with no connection at all.
That's okay.